Inspire Talk Radio, tune in to LA Talk Radio for reverent, entertaining, and cool talk.
We explore the throwing of rice and the throwing of insults as Fact Time takes a look at the marriages and divorces that occurred on October 27th. Way, way back in 1880, Teddy Roosevelt married Alice Lee. Marilyn Monroe and Joe DiMaggio were divorced just over 10 years after they got married in 1954. And he got her, babe, in 1964. That's when Sonny married Cher. That's Back Time for October 27th. This is your announcer speaking.
Kitchen. A burned entree is passed off as Cajun. It's the Onion Radio News. This is Doyle Redland reporting. Local man Ben Harster alleged today that his wife Jean served him a dish of charred artichoke hearts last night and called them, quote, Cajun style to cover up a kitchen disaster. Harster first suspected foul play when his wife emerged from their smoke-filled kitchen with some old Mardi Gras beads around her neck.
She's never really cooked Cajun food before. Why start now?
Harster added that he managed to choke down a few of the blackened lumps, but drew the line at what she was calling spaghetti jambalaya. Doyle Redland for the Onion Radio News, online at theonion.com.
Bud Light presents Real American Heroes.
Real American Heroes.
Today, we salute you, Mr. Highway Department Flagman.
Mr. Highway Department Flagman.
You're entrusted with the awesome responsibility of kind of, definitely, almost telling us it's our turn to head down the only open lane on a two-way street in rush hour.
It's always the other side's turn.
You, sir, take that orange flag and with the dexterity of a tree sloth, make a gesture that says, go. Or is that stop? Or are you trying to scare away a bee?
We'll never know.
Yes, Mr. Highway Department Flagman, you're too portly to fit down a manhole. You don't have the expertise to operate a shovel. So they gave you a reflective vest and entrusted you with our very lives.
Just hit the gas and pray.
So the next time you see a man at work sign, crack a Bud Light to someone who's not even working and who, on closer inspection, might not even be a man. Mr. Highway Department Flagman, a real American hero.
Mr. Highway Department Flagman.
Ambiguous hand gesture, St. Louis, Missouri.
Now from high atop the LA Talk Radio building, it's time for Sam and Susie in the Morning.
Sam and Susie in the Morning.
Right here on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Monday, October 27th. A brand new week, and Susie's back with us.
Hello.
In the studio, all in one piece.
Barely. Oh, man.
Oh, man. You just came strolling into the office.
Mm-hmm.
I could tell you were like not yourself.
I'm sick as a dog.
Are you really?
Yes. I can't breathe out of my nose and my eyes. If I take my sunglasses off, I look Chinese.
Really?
And contrary to my usual reasoning for these things, being out getting drunk all night, I was not. I took sleeping pills and went to bed like a good little girl last night.
Good for you.
But I think...
You don't think you got sick from being on the plane? Because I always get sick from being on planes.
No, when I got to New York, Franz was sick. So
yeah.
He had the exact same thing that I have right now. So that motherfucker.
Nice.
I mean...
Motherfucker. You went all the way there to fuck him. Now you're cursing him.
I went there to see my family. Getting to see him was like a byproduct. You know what I mean? One of those extra added bonuses.
Well, I can't wait. I mean, I'm sure you have a lot to tell. Let me just tease. We have a couple of phone guests today. A couple of authors. And one is about a book about the Great Pyramid.
Mm.
Did you ever care about the Great Pyramid?
I used to be so fascinated with Egypt in general.
Really?
When I was younger, I used to do a ton of research, and I was just always like looking into it. That author seems really exciting.
Yeah, this food. This book is fascinating. It really is, and we're gonna have some answers. If you always had them on the
construction of the pyramid.
Yeah, I mean, it's really, and the purpose of it and all that, you know. Mm. So it's really interesting. And then we're going to have another author that's going to help us get started in business and so forth, like figure out what it takes to succeed in business, you know. And I thought that's pretty relevant. So a lot of people
Definitely.
Seem to be leaving their jobs, starting something new, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, so that's what we have coming up. And, of course, a lot of stories from Susie and things like
that. If I could sort them out in my head. I still have not processed anything yet from the weekend.
Yeah. So so you left when? Thursday night?
Yes, I left Thursday night, and then I took literally a red eye into Manhattan. I got in at like 5:45 in the morning,
mm-hmm.
and my dad's girlfriend picked me up at the airport to save me money on cabs.
Oh, so you decided not to hitchhike?
Yeah, and I've decided that was probably a good idea, considering it was just kind of shady. Not shady people, but you know what I mean? It's kind of like dark and dreary, and yeah. you know, everyone's like half asleep from getting off the plane, and people weren't like particularly friendly, like shall we say.
Mm.
And neither was I. You know, I wasn't really in the happiest mood either. So I was stuck in like the middle seat, and then I couldn't like fall asleep,
God,
and bouncing around. Middle seat sucks.
It really, really sucks.
And let me just rant for 1 second. On the plane home yesterday, we actually had to wait. Our plane was delayed because we had to have extra seatbelt extenders.
Really?
Brought onto the plane.
Oh, there were too many
fat people
or people with kids.
We needed five extra, not with kids.
No, not with kids,
just
fat people.
We needed five extra seatbelt extenders on our plane.
Really? And that's why they delayed the plane?
Yep.
Wow.
Because they can't take off unless your seatbelt's on. You can't put your seatbelt on if it doesn't fit. But isn't that so awful?
It is. I mean, what the fuck?
Yeah, I couldn't believe that. But yeah.
So they usually don't have five extenders on the plane?
No, I think they usually only have like one or two. I think that's like pretty much, you know, the most you're supposed to have on the plane.
I see.
Of fat people. I don't know. Never mind.
Yeah, but I mean, it's, yeah, I don't understand that. You know, being so big it would be so uncomfortable to get into the seat.
I know.
You know, and sit through it for 5-6 hours. Wow.
I don't know how people have done that, but I mean, I have a hard enough time like sitting still by myself.
Yeah.
You know, and that seat is still pretty small for me, and I don't think I'm like a large person by any means.
Yeah.
But
it's so tight in those seats, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not fun flying anymore. It used to be a lot of fun to fly.
Really?
Yeah.
When?
It did. She's like, really? Yeah, before you were born.
I've never had fun flying. I've always kind of hit, unless I'm actually flying the plane myself. That's the only time I have a good time.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so then my dad's girlfriend picked me up at the airport and dropped me off in Brooklyn, mm-hmm. where the Franz was. And I knew this was going to happen. Like, he hadn't told me, like, before the plane left, mm-hmm. Where he was even staying. And I was like, can you please just give me your address of, like, where you're staying, where I'm going to meet you? You know, I don't want to be, like, chasing you around New York City at, like, 5:45 in the morning. You know, which I don't think is an unreasonable request, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I'd
yeah.
like to know where I'm going
yes.
at the crack of dawn.
I think that would help. And why wouldn't he?
He was too busy with all of our other friends that had, like, come in the night before and out partying and, like, just getting drunk and running around town, so...
Too busy to give you a fucking address.
Too busy to give me a fucking address. So I was so pissed off. Like, I actually was crying on the plane, like, right before the plane took off to, like, even go to New York. I was sending this nasty message being like, fuck you, you're such a fucking, like, inconsiderate jerk. You know, I'm flying 3,000 miles to see you, and I've sent you 10 emails, left you voice messages, sent you SMSs being like, please just give me the freaking address.
Yeah.
At this point, I'm, like, feeling stupid. I'm like, maybe I shouldn't even go, you know, fuck this, fuck mm-hmm. him, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
As I'm crying on the plane. So, I finally, like, I landed, and I made up my mind that I wasn't even going to see him when I landed
in
JFK. And then I turn on my phone, and I've got an email from him being like, I'm so sorry, honey bunny. I love you. Like, please come and see me.
Yeah.
La-da-da-da-da. So, the sucker that I am.
Yeah. This is, I think this is some sort of abuse here, you know, emotional abuse.
You think so?
Oh, yeah, to harass you like this, and then, oh, I'm sorry, I'm so sorry, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's like sort of... I mean, it would make me crazy if someone treated me like this, you know, constantly.
Thank you.
It's like a roller coaster, you know?
I know.
Yeah.
Totally is.
Yeah.
And so then I'm in the car with Judy's mom. And so I finally, like, call Franz. He doesn't pick up the phone. Mm-hmm. And so I call him again and again and again and again. I call him, like, 20 times before he finally wakes up out of his, like, drunken stupor, passed out self, coma, whatever. And I was like, can you please come and open the door so I can at least get into this building? Because it's New York and you've got to be let in
yeah.
through five different doors. And he's like, are you ready to go? And I thought he was going to say, like, go have sex. And I was like, he's like, are you ready to go to sleep? I said, no, God damn it. I was like, that's the last thing I want to do right now. I want to have sex.
Where does he live?
He rented an apartment in Brooklyn for all of our bike friends that were out for this event.
Oh, so it's a few people paying for it.
Yeah, we ended up having like probably 20 people staying there.
Really?
Yeah.
And how large is the place?
It was a 4-bedroom.
Oh, 4-bedroom.
Yeah.
In Manhattan?
In Brooklyn.
In Brooklyn.
Yes, yes.
How much would something like this cost a month?
For 5 days, it was $800.
Oh. 5 days.
5 days.
Hmm.
But it was actually okay. Pretty nice, but for 20 people staying in there, and you only have one bathroom.
That's a lot of fucking people.
It's a lot of fucking people, and a lot of fucking bikes. We had 20 bikes in the apartment. We had 20 people in the apartment. We kind of ended up being like the party house where everyone would come, and kind of, it was like our central area. Oh my God.
You guys are crazy.
I know. A lot of people like just passed out sleeping all over the floors and like all different kinds of conditions and shapes and sizes.
So did you end up staying there?
I ended up staying there, yeah, because I had my other option was to stay like in Manhattan at my dad's girlfriend's apartment or at, you know, at someone else's apartment, but that was way too far away from where all the action was. And by the time Saturday rolled around, Sam, I was so fucked up. Oh my God.
From what?
Just drinking and smoking pot.
Really?
But I did it on an empty stomach. For breakfast, I had like 3 40s of like, oh my God, Coors Light and Old English.
Whoa.
So by the time I'm at this bike event, I was just completely gone. And I had like nothing to eat all day. And so,
wow.
Oh man. Yeah, next thing you know, I ended up, like, hailing a limo or calling, like, a limo and finding the number in my phone for some limo service to come, like, pick me up. And I was like, I need pizza. So I've got the limo, like, waiting outside the pizza store as I'm having a pizza made in my drunken stupor. And I finally made it back to the apartment. And I'm like, oh, my God. And this was at 6 o'clock at night on Saturday.
Yeah.
I was just done for.
Yeah.
Completely done for.
So let me ask you this. I mean, you keep doing this, like, over and over. What is the, I mean, I still try to understand, what is the motive to get so fucked up? I mean, I can understand drinking, getting the buzz and stuff, or smoking, getting a nice buzz going.
Getting that fucked up, mm-hmm. it's not that much fun. Once you reach that point.
So why do you do it?
Because it's hard to know, like, when your last drink, because, I mean, your last sip of alcohol, mm-hmm. It could always be not enough, or it could be too much. You never know. Like when you actually are drinking, mm-hmm. I mean, the point obviously is to get drunk if you're drinking the way that we are drinking, and we're all pretty much big binge drinkers in this group. Mm. But so I don't know. Like it takes your body like longer to absorb that last drink, and you never know when it's really going to hit you. Mm. And it depends on the kind of alcohol you are drinking, and it depends on the kind of food that you've had in your stomach or not.
Right.
But
the objective here is to get shit-faced.
But not that shit-faced. No? I really was not planning on getting that shit-faced. Mm. And that was my own fault for not eating. Mm. If I had actually eaten something, it wouldn't have been that bad.
Yeah.
But
you know what they call someone who drinks an empty stomach?
What?
An alcoholic.
Okay, what about all the people that go tailgating like for football games and stuff? You know, they wake up and all of a sudden the first thing they do is like they crack open a beer.
That's true.
All of those people, like it's the same thing. This is like
just an occasion.
It was a spectators event that we were all out like, and we were just out to just, you know, we're on vacation. We're all just going to be drinking and watching the spectacles of these crazy freaking bike people.
Right, but you do get to a point where you don't really enjoy it, right?
I did because I definitely needed to eat and pass out.
Yeah.
So that's when I took the limo to the pizza place, back to the apartment, ate the pizza, and passed out.
Yeah. But let me ask you this. What if you had like 3 drinks or something?
Yeah.
Would that be enough?
I would rather have no drinks at all than have 3 drinks.
Why? But don't you get a buzz from it?
No. From 3 drinks?
No?
No.
Wow.
That's like having like a glass of water for me.
Wow. So, okay.
Unless I actually make the drinks myself.
Okay, I'm not going to say you're an alcoholic again, but you are.
I didn't drink last night.
I'm going to get off your case.
Yeah, right.
No, but I mean, you drink in a way that normal people don't.
I'm switching to painkillers for now.
Are you?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's better, Susie.
Yeah.
What brand are you focusing on? Like OxyContin?
No, that's just stupid.
Yeah.
I'm thinking like Xanax and Valium and... some Ambien for sleeping at night.
I see.
Yeah.
Well,
definitely. I thought you'd get a kick out of
but
that one.
Why self-medicate? Why not go to a doctor and figure out how do I do this like naturally where I can go to sleep?
That is doing it that way.
Yeah.
Going to a doctor and getting all those things prescribed.
I see, okay.
Yes.
But Valium is not something that you take regularly.
You can.
Yeah.
It's wonderful. Have you ever taken a Valium?
I've taken Valium, yeah. It's pretty good, but I would imagine if I took it every day, I'd be pretty hooked and not into life that much.
It just kind of, I don't know, for some reason it kind of calms me down and just,
yeah.
You know.
Oh, yeah, it calms you down. There's no question about it.
Well, I'm just saying self-medicating with anything in general, it just calms me down.
Yeah.
Because I'm so like, all
but
the time.
But that's what I'm saying. You're not getting the right prescription from the doctor. Because if you do, then you don't have the need for, like, specialty medicine, you know. You'd already be calm or whatever, you know. So.
It's just, like, inherent in my personality to be kind of, like, crazy and off the wall, though. I don't know.
Right.
I just can't help it.
Yeah.
It's just the way I am.
Yeah, I just hope not to find you, you know, like on the sidewalk one morning or something, you know. Like,
oh, I will be just fine. Up. Don't worry about that.
Okay.
I've gotten out of that stage of my life. I don't get that fucked up anymore.
Okay. Yeah.
I don't.
Only in New York you did.
Actually, only in Canada.
Oh. You just said you got shit-faced like this 2 days ago.
Yeah, but that's just drinking and on pot. Mm.
Okay, you're talking about going further than that.
Oh, yes. There are different levels of fucked upness, and that was one level that was pretty bad. But there are definitely others.
Yeah.
So. You're horrified.
Yes, I am, actually.
Oh, my God. Why don't we call one of these authors?
Yeah, we're going to call the author.
Why don't we change pace here? Let's see.
Okay, so we're going to call Mr. Bob Breyer.
Okay.
And I'm just going to have to focus here.
What's and he wrote the Secret of the Great Pyramid, How One Man's Obsession Led to the Solution of Ancient Egypt's Greatest Mystery.
Yeah. And you know what? It's like he shatters a lot of myths, which I liked, you know, because, I mean, there's so many myths about the Great Pyramid and everything, you know?
It's mind-boggling.
Yeah, it really is. Mr. Bob Breyer.
Hello.
Mr. Bob Breyer.
That's me.
Good morning. This is Sam and Susie calling you from Los Angeles at LA Talk Radio. How are you doing?
Fine, Sam.
Great. Where are you at? Where are we calling you?
I'm in
you?
New York.
New York?
I'm in New York in the Bronx. In the Bronx.
In the Bronx, wonderful. Yeah. Susie just came back from a trip to New York.
Yeah, I just got back last night.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and how is the weather up there? Is it nice?
Gorgeous.
It's beautiful. It's been beautiful for about 2.5 weeks, and I'm just hoping it holds on.
Wow.
You're lying. It wasn't beautiful on Saturday. It rained a lot.
Oh, that was the rain. That was the rainy. The only one day out of 2 weeks. Doesn't count.
Are you a New York born and raised, pretty much?
Yeah, born in the Bronx, still live here.
Oh, wow. Wow. That's love. That's
yes.
love. Yeah. If you stay in the Bronx, definitely. It gets bad rap, right? The Bronx, I would imagine it's not as bad as it is, or they make it out to be?
No, there's some beautiful places in the Bronx, and it's on its way up anyway. Even the bad neighborhoods are getting gentrified, so, no, it's a fine place to live.
Awesome. Well, we're calling you today, of course, regarding your new book, Secret of the Great Pyramid. And I went through a portion of the book and was really fascinated because you managed really to focus the subject on what really matters and on shattering, I think, some of the myths that people have about the pyramid. So let me ask you this. How did you first get into this? What drew you towards a pyramid and writing a book about it?
Yeah, well, actually, I'm not a pyramid specialist. I'm an Egyptologist. I work in Egypt all the time. But my specialty is really mummies.
Oh.
And what happened was I got an email from a French architect. His name is Jean-Pierre Houdin. And he had a new theory of how the Great Pyramid of Giza was built. And we really don't know how it was built. It's one of those, you know, mysteries. It's the only one of the seven wonders of the ancient world that is still standing, but we don't know how it was built. So it all started with this email from this French architect, and he sounded interesting. And I said, well, if you're in New York, in the Bronx, come to the Bronx, and we'll have dinner and we'll see what you have. So he did, and that's how it all started.
Oh, wow. So he's been into this for a while.
Yeah. Yes, actually, into it is a very mild way of putting it.
Obsessed.
He really is obsessed.
Wow.
When he came to dinner, he brought his laptop with him, and he's an architect, and he showed us these computer simulations he had done of the Great Pyramid, little models on the computer and showing how it might have been built, et cetera, and they were beautiful. They were just gorgeous. I had just finished doing a documentary on the Great Pyramid, a TV documentary, and his graphics were better than mine, and we had spent a fortune on it. So
wow.
I was really impressed with that, you know. And then when his story started evolving, I mean, he's almost as interesting as the pyramid. He gave up his architectural practice. He was a successful architect in Paris. Mm-hmm. He had a beautiful apartment, sold the apartment so he could move into a one-room flat, and for something like 10 hours a day for about 6 years, he just worked on this question of how the pyramid was built.
Wow. That's dedication.
Oh, yeah. That's obsession, all right. So,
it is.
Yeah, and I know you documented that meeting in the book, in the beginning of the book. And
yeah.
I would be fascinated. Well, you've got some experience with Egypt and stuff, but I would imagine still if somebody came to you out of the blue and proposed something like this where, it would grab your attention by all means. So let's get there was a couple things that really interested me, and the first thing is the purpose of why the pyramids were built. I think there are so many myths, probably as many as have been generations to humanity, who have theories about how or why the pyramids were built. Do you want to tell us a little bit about this?
Sure. You're right, Sam. There are loads of myths associated with the Great Pyramid of Giza. There's only one reason why the pyramids were built, one and only one, to protect the mummy of the pharaoh. They were burials for the kings of Egypt. And each pyramid was built for a different king. So all this idea about them being astronomical observatories or granaries for Joseph in Egypt or, you know, anything else, markers for geographical purposes, no. They were just burials for the king. But another myth, Sam, is, you know, this thing that they were built by slaves.
Yes.
They weren't?
By the Israelites.
Yeah, yes. No. You know, if you read the Bible, it doesn't say the Israelites built the pyramids. They built the cities of Ramses, you know. So really, the pyramids were way before the Israelites ever were in Egypt. These are 4,500-year-old monuments. They were before the Israelites. So they weren't built by slaves. They were built by free labor, construction workers who were paid for by the king.
Yes, absolutely. So, I mean,
how long would it take to build one of these pyramids?
Good question, Susie. It takes about 20 years to build a big one.
20 years.
The Great Pyramid of Giza was built within a period of about 20 years.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Yeah, and you know, I'll give you an amazing statistic. You know, everybody says, oh, wow, but wait till you hear this one, and you go, oh, wow, wow. The pyramid is made of more than 2 million blocks of stone, and they average about 2.5 tons each. That means if you're building a pyramid in 20 years, and you got 2 million blocks of stone, one block of stone is put in place every 3.5 minutes.
Oh,
every
wow.
3.5
what?
Minutes, another block
That's
of stone
amazing.
Is put in place for 20 years.
That's if they work nonstop.
10-hour days.
Yeah. Oh, 10-hour days. 10-hour days.
Yeah. It's just amazing, right?
That is amazing. Crazy.
And we still, I mean.
How do they get the blocks up there? How do they lift them?
The big question.
Okay, that's the big question, guys. That's the big one. And that's what Jean-Pierre Houdin, the French architect, seems to have answered. Now, you know, the way that Hollywood always shows it is this one big ramp going to the top of the pyramid, and you have these guys hauling the blocks up the ramp.
Right.
Now, it can't happen that way. It's not possible. I'll tell you why. Mm-hmm. The pyramid is 480 feet high, so it's about as tall as a 50-story building.
Mm.
Now, you have to keep the slope gentle because the guys have to be able to pull a block up it.
Right.
And that means the ramp would have to be about a mile long would have the same volume as the pyramid. It would be like building two pyramids. You build a ramp, and then you build a pyramid.
Right.
So it just couldn't be. And you know, we never found any remains of a ramp like that. It would weigh 4 million tons.
Yes.
And they couldn't cart a thing like that away, so we know that was wrong. That's always the theory that people think of. It didn't happen that way.
Right. They don't think about how practical it actually is to do that.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, it's really, until you try to sort of build it mentally.
Right,
you know,
right.
You really get the idea.
It.
And that's what Jean-Pierre did on the computer. Mm. He built a virtual pyramid block by block on his computer to figure this out.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he knew that this single ramp theory couldn't work, not possible.
Right.
And then he hit on the real answer. And it looks like it's not just a theory. It looks like there's good evidence for it.
Mm-hmm.
There is a ramp, but it's inside the pyramid. It's a mile-long ramp, corkscrewing up inside the pyramid, a little bit like in a parking garage when you get the ramp that you're driving around and around and going up and up and up to the
right.
fifth
yeah.
level because you can never get a spot on the first level.
Uh-huh. Right.
It's like that, and the ramp is still inside the pyramid,
yes.
waiting to be discovered.
Wow, that's amazing. Now, but are you trying to tell me that all these thousands of years people didn't know that ramp existed inside the pyramid?
Exactly.
Wow.
It's an incredible story.
Yeah, nobody's been inside for that?
No, because you see, the ramp is still behind blocks.
Uh-huh.
In other words, the pyramid is not completely solid. Of course, there's a burial chamber. There's actually several chambers inside the pyramid. But the ramp is behind the sort of outside of the pyramid. So there's still a couple of levels of blocks that would have to be removed before you could actually walk inside that ramp.
We need to make a really big X-ray machine.
Well, you know, Susie, you got it. You got it. No, really. It's been done. That's the interesting thing. A French team did a survey of the pyramid using what's basically a really big X-ray machine. It's called microgravimetrics. What you do is you test out the density in different areas of the pyramid. And if, indeed, there's a low-density area, it might mean you have a hidden chamber.
Yes.
So these guys did this kind of survey.
So it's like a big stud finder.
Yeah. They did this kind of survey.
Sorry, oversimplify.
Yeah. No, it's good.
So this is amazing. And so you're saying that you're saying it's like sort of an internal ramp, right? Like a sort of a tunnel. So what you're saying is they went... So they built the pyramid from the inside out. Is that what
you're
saying?
Exactly.
Wow.
Yes. Exactly.
I'm actually going with it. It's handicap accessible, and they just wanted it for their wheelchairs.
Yeah.
Right. It's a ramp. It's a ramp. Of course it's handicap accessible. Right.
So it was built from the inside, but the question still remains, how did they lift those blocks?
Hauled them up on sleds. The blocks are about 2.5 tons each. Mm-hmm. And the internal ramp is about an 8% slope, which is gentle, and it takes 10 men to haul a block up on a sled. So they had constant teams of guys hauling up these ramps and then walking down and then keep hauling.
Wow, that's amazing.
That is so unbelievable.
You know, this is such a breakthrough, you know, from all the stuff that we've heard before. And, and it makes sense, I think, the fascination of the ancient Egyptians with immortality and so forth. And we've seen that. I mean, it's obvious with the mummies and everything. So have there actually been mummies discovered inside that pyramid?
Not inside this pyramid. It was robbed. It was robbed in ancient times when the government was weak for a period and they couldn't guard the pyramids. So the mummies are gone. The treasures are gone. All we have is the architecture.
Oh, wow. That's
amazing.
Oh, that's
so sad.
Yeah.
It is. All that work and it didn't work.
Yeah.
Tell us something else about mummies that we wouldn't usually know.
Mummies are my thing. Are you kidding? You have a couple of hours?
There you go.
I'll tell you a funny story. About 14 years ago, we really didn't know the details of how they mummified their dead. And about 14 years ago, I decided we had to figure out how they did it. So I took a human cadaver, and I mummified it in the ancient Egyptian way. You know, I took out the brain through the nose. I removed the internal organs through a small incision in the left side of the abdomen. And that's how we really finally figured out how they did it.
Mm-hmm. And how do they do it?
Well, they did it. I mean, what's remarkable is they did it so well, meaning, you know, the mummies after 3,000 years still are recognizable human beings.
Yes.
You know, you can look at that person, if you knew him 3,000 years ago, you'd recognize him. I mean, it's incredible. The key was dehydrating the body. They got the moisture out very quickly. They put it in a salt called natron to dehydrate it. Once you get rid of the moisture in the body, bacteria won't decay it because bacteria need moisture. So the key was dehydrating this thing really fast.
I see. So it seems like a lot of living things, when you dehydrate them, they sort of last a long time. Is that true?
Sure. That's why you can have blueberries in your cereal. You know, these little dried up blueberries are living mummies of blueberries.
I had the dried up strawberries in the Special K this morning, actually.
That's right. It's a mummy. It's a strawberry mummy.
Well. Oh, my goodness.
So this is amazing. Now, do you think if today we decided to mummify people, we would do better than they did with the technology we have today?
A little bit better, but I think we'd do basically the same. I mean, look how well they've done it.
Yes.
I know the mummy that I created 14 years ago has been at room temperature for the last 14 years. Nothing special to preserve it, just like the ancient Egyptian mummies. And it looks fine. There's no signs of decay. We check it every once in a while.
Is he just like sitting on your couch?
Yeah. No, it's actually at a medical school. It's dead and well, as we say.
Yeah.
But Khufu would have been mummified the same way. The owner of the Great Pyramid of Giza. And the only thing left, though, in the burial chamber is a sarcophagus.
Wow. Amazing. Yeah. Amazing stuff. What was his name again? The architect.
The architect.
Yes,
Jean-Pierre Houdin.
Right, and now is he still working on this after he discovered the secret and all that stuff? Is he still into it?
I must tell you guys, I worry about Jean-Pierre.
He hasn't
turned the page. He's still working on the Great Pyramid, and he says there are still mysteries to be discovered. He may be right, but I think he'll be happy for the rest of his life just to work on his computer and figure out the mysteries of the Great Pyramid.
Yeah, he found his calling. Somebody has to do it, you know.
He's a happy man.
Yes.
Yeah, I'll tell you something funny. When I first started working with him and we started writing this book, and what I said in the book is what I think is honest. I said, Jean-Pierre is obsessed. And he said, no, Bob. Passionate.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. That's cute.
One degree less than obsessed, I suppose.
Right.
But,
right.
Well, wow. This is fascinating. Bob Breyer with the book The Secret of the Great Pyramid. I would highly recommend this. I enjoyed it, and I haven't even finished the whole thing yet, but there's great pictures in there and of everything that you're talking about. And I salute you for doing this. And what is your what's the next objective for you?
You know, I'm really just relaxing and kicking back a little. I was working on this thing intensively for a year, just sort of learning the pyramid, catching up to speed. You know, we went to Egypt, we did our investigation, and now I think I'm going to be happy just staying back here and reading, writing, and teaching at the university, at Long Island University.
There you go, yeah, and going to see the mummy movies and stuff, you know?
Yes, oh, I love them, I love them.
Really, they don't drive you nuts when they're, you know, not portrayed correctly?
Yeah, I love them. No, the worse the better.
It's entertainment.
The worse the better.
Yeah.
You should actually come out to L.A. and be, you know, like a consultant to the
right.
Movies.
I'm ready. My bags are packed.
Yeah. Amazing. And so you've been into ancient Egypt for a long time. And God, there's just so much more to ask you, but we are out of time. Maybe we'll invite you to come back and talk some more about this. I mean, this is definitely a book that covers more, and your background definitely covers more than 15 minutes. So
I'd be happy to visit with you too again.
Wonderful.
Thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Bob Breyer. Go get the book. And we thank you for joining us this morning.
Oh, wait. Should we see if he has a website or something?
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. Absolutely.
I'll tell you how to do it. If you go to cw.postcollege, that's the campus, cwpostcollege.
Okay.
And then you just click on me, you'll get my website.
Okay.
Wonderful.
cwpostcollege.
Okay.
Sam,
you got it.
It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Bob.
Thank you.
Take care.
Okay. That was Bob Breyer. Sorry.
That's so cool.
Yeah, isn't it, though?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I love this stuff, you know? It's just like, you know, it's like sort of like bringing the mummy movie into real life sort of a thing.
I know. I can't believe that the guy, you know, his mummy was stolen.
Yeah.
Why would they want to steal the mummy?
Because I guess they knew it would be worth a lot of money, whatever grave diggers or whatever, grave robbers. And
then I guess it must still be out there, like waiting to be sold on the black market somewhere.
Who knows? Yeah, who knows?
I want it. I want the mummy for Christmas.
Do you?
But, Daddy, I want a mummy.
They do look creepy, though. I mean, my God, you know.
Maybe I'll be a mummy for Halloween.
Yeah, you want to do that?
Yes. Oh, my God.
Have you decided what you're going to be for Halloween yet?
I'm so actually freaking out right now about time again, and now I'm sick on top of it all. It's like the one time I really need to not be sick, because I'm supposed to be in Vancouver for Halloween.
Oh.
But now
this weekend?
Yeah.
Really?
I've told you these things a million times.
I know.
And you don't listen to me.
No, well, you know.
I feel like we're married over here. Honey, you never listen to a goddamn thing I say. For God's sake, Sam.
Listen, I remember you said that. I just don't keep up with the time schedule.
I know. Like last week, I was like, I'm going to be in New York tomorrow. And you're like, what? Tomorrow? I'm like, if you were closer, I swear half the time I'd reach over and just slap you. Oh, God. But yes, I'm supposed to be in Vancouver this week. And right now, I'm kind of freaking out, Sam, I got to tell you, because I've got a stats test on Wednesday that I need to do well on. My UCLA application is due on Friday, and I'm supposed to be in Vancouver then, and also I'm supposed to be completely out of my other apartment. And so I'm still trying to find a place for my couch and my kitchen table, and I've got so much shit over there still.
Yeah. You know what? Just take them out, put them on the street. People will take them.
No, but they're worth a lot of money.
Oh, I see. Okay. So you do want to try and sell them, right?
Well, at this point, I've never really wanted to have to sell them. I just haven't had anywhere to put them.
Yeah.
So I think I'm actually going to keep my couch and just bring that in my... Because I built my bed. It's up in the air in a loft still. But ever since... You know, I wasn't the best carpenter when I was doing carpentry work back in the day. And reassembling that thing with my skills alone, I don't know. It's kind of rickety. I mean, I don't think I would ever have sex in my bed right now.
Really?
Because it seriously could, like, just fall down. We're talking like 6 feet in the air, just go collapsing.
You're nuts.
No, I know. But so when I have the couch like wedged underneath it, mm-hmm. it kind of stabilizes the whole structure. So you think I'm kidding. I'm so dead serious.
Oh, wow. I mean, is there any room in your room to move?
Well, yes. It can go underneath. That's exactly where it was in my old apartment. Okay. It goes underneath the loft. And it wedges in there so tightly and perfectly that it kind of it really stabilizes the bed.
Yeah.
You know, that way I'm free to... and whatever else. I have been laying so still at night in this bed because I crawl like very carefully onto it. I'm like, doo-doon, doo-doon. Oh, and then as soon as I lay down flat, I just kind of slowly let out my breath. And it's like, okay, the bed's not going to fall down if I don't move.
Oh, so, the trials and tribulations of Susie.
No, I have to tell you this, though. So I was on the plane yesterday, and I'm freaking out. All of a sudden, I can't sleep on the plane because I'm freaking out about all the things that I've got to do. And I realize I probably shouldn't have gone to New York. You know, it was just way, way too much and I had way too much to do. But I try and be super Susie and get everything done.
Yeah.
But so I'm sitting on the plane freaking out about this. This was after I puked twice. I felt bad for the people next to me, but oh well.
You puked right there in your seat?
No, thank God I didn't. Yeah. But it was like right when the plane was about to take off, mm-hmm. you know, all of a sudden, like, I'm like, all right, come on, plane. Because, you know, when you're about to puke, mm-hmm. it just starts coming up. And yeah. there's nothing you could do about it.
Oh,
and so
wow.
The only thing you can do is, like, focus on your breathing and be like, okay, you know, pressing it down. And so as soon as the plane took off, I, like, leaped out of my seat. I leaped over the guy next to me, and I made it to the bathroom in time for the flight attendant to tell me to get back in my seat.
Yeah.
And I was like,
how embarrassing it is if you have to puke right there, you know?
I know. I was looking in that little bag. I actually had
it. I would die if somebody did it next to me.
Especially like a grown adult. Like, it's different if it's like a small child or something.
That's true.
But if you're like an adult and you're, I don't know. Definitely not my finest moment.
No, huh?
But yeah, so I'm freaking out on the plane trying to figure out how I'm going to get this couch like back to my new house because, you know, I already had the moving truck thing and I don't want to, you know, waste the money doing that.
Right.
So I had this brilliant plan that I was going to take the couch and put it on top of my Mini Cooper. And I was going to take my rock climbing rope and I was going to secure it to my Mini Cooper, this huge couch, this huge overstuffed couch.
Yeah, you know that it's illegal to drive like that.
Why?
Because it's oversized. You can't drive that. You'd get pulled over in 2 seconds.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. It's oversized like that. I mean, it has, you know, it could fall.
Even if I secured it very well?
Susie, I'm glad you couldn't get it up there. Yeah, how would the hell would you put a couch on top of your car by yourself?
I don't know. I'd find a way. I could make it happen. But so anyway, I called Eric and I told him, I was like, I think I'm going to put my couch on top of my Mini Cooper. And he called me like, I sent him a text message and he called me back instantly. He's like, don't you dare. He's like, oh my God. He's like, no, it could fall off. It could crush someone.
Yeah.
You know, it could totally crush the car. It's bigger than the car. And he said, Susie, I know, you know, when you get these things in your head, like you have to get them done now. Because I start freaking out about when I'm going to get things done. I have to do it like right this second.
Right.
And so he was just like, please just calm down. Do not try and put the couch on top of your car.
Yeah.
And he's like, I will take care of it. I'm like, fine.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, well, let's take a little break. We'll be back right after this.
I was really worried about my high blood pressure. But then my doctor told me about Flatulent.
Flatulent is the once daily pill that cuts blood pressure the natural way.
Now when something like a traffic jam makes my blood pressure go up, it's no problem because I'm taking Flatulent.
Ask your doctor if Flatulent is right for you. Side effects include gassy or bloated feeling, strange noise emitted from buttocks, egg-like smell, and immature giggling. Don't take Flatulent if you're trying to get pregnant because it may ruin the moment.
Now I know my blood pressure is in check. Thanks to Flatulent.
Flatulent from Pfizer Pharmaceuticals.
Found the number one internet site for irreverent, cool, and entertaining talk programming. It's LA Talk Radio. We say what we want.
Thank you. eternally. We cannot turn back now. We've fallen deep in you and me.
So, are you ready to call the next one?
Yes, I would love to.
We've got, like, authors all morning. I got to tell you, it's like last week I get this package. 15 books in there.
Are you kidding?
No.
Oh, my gosh.
That's how many interviews we have coming up. I mean, there's some great books out there, you know?
Well, can I get them a night in advance?
Do you need... How am I going to get it to you?
Well, don't you get them like a week in advance?
Yeah.
Well.
But I never get around to it till a few minutes before the show. No, but what do you want me to say, Susie? I'll ask him for 2 fucking copies. Okay.
Or you could just give me the books ahead of time. I don't know.
I suppose I could. I don't know. I'm kind of mean.
I know you're very mean. You're very selfish. You're keeping all these books for yourself.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, the truth is, I don't really have much time. I wish I had time to read all of them, you know?
Time.
Time. It's
time,
one thing
time,
that...
Time. I've never had less time, and it's really freaking me out.
Really? Okay. Good morning, Mr. Norm Brodsky.
Yes,
good morning to you. This is Sam and Susie calling from Los Angeles.
Welcome to our show.
Hi.
How are you?
Thank you. Great.
Great. And we're calling you where?
Right now, I'm in Miami, Florida.
Oh, Miami, Florida. Is that on vacation?
You could say a few days off.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah, I always associated Miami with vacation. Call me crazy, but, you know. Let's get to your book. You wrote the book called The Knack, How Street Smart Entrepreneurs Learn to Handle Whatever Comes Up. And so tell us a little bit about your background. I know you've been writing for Inc. magazine. How long have you been into business, let's say reporting, whatever.
Well, I started my first business in the mid-70s, mm-hmm. and I started writing probably about 14 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I sold my last business about in December of last year, right at probably the top of the market.
Oh, so you're one of those who started businesses early in life?
Yes, I am, and I started those businesses about, I guess, 35 years ago.
Oh, wow. Wow, and what was that business?
The first business I started was a law firm. I was an attorney.
Oh, what kind of attorney?
Well, corporate attorney. I don't like to tell too many people that.
Yeah.
So I had to break all the bad habits to become a real businessman.
Yeah, oh. There you go. Yeah, so you were at a disadvantage from the get-go.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So, you know, I went over your book, and you do get into some of the details of how to run a business and so forth. But let's go to the beginning. Let's say you're a person thinking of starting a business, leaving your current job because you're frustrated or bored, and you want to get into business, and you've never done this before. What is the first thing you want to do?
Well, first of all, you want to understand what you want your lifestyle to be. So you have to find something that will fit within that lifestyle. Most people leave where they're working, let's say, to start a business because they're unhappy. So you don't want to start a business where you'd be unhappy.
Right. Makes sense. Makes sense.
So the first thing you should do is form a life plan. Where do I want to be in the next 10, 15 years? And then after that, you select a business that fits within that life plan.
I see.
It's kind of like picking the right major in college.
It's exactly so like that. But when we go to college, of course, we don't know what the right major is. But when we've been in the workforce for quite some time, we sort of know where we want or like to have our life go.
Right. Mm. So you decide that regardless of what business you're going to get into, first you want to decide, really, what is my main goal here?
Exactly. Otherwise, you're going to be very unhappy. If you are unhappy with your job for various reasons, if you start a business where you're not going to be happy, what good is that?
Yes, absolutely. So let's say I decided what business I want to get into. Now, what is the next thing I want to do?
Well, the next thing is to do market research, and that can be done for nothing. In a number of different ways. The first way is you can talk to other business people, maybe in a similar business and not in the locale you want to start it with. The second thing, most businesses have these organizations that everybody belongs to, an industry organization,
right.
And they can be very helpful. You can call them up, they have merchandise material, or they usually have an industry meeting once or twice a year. All this marketing can be done for nothing.
Interesting. Very interesting. So, and I would imagine, you know, there's a lot of research material on the internet and stuff, you know, that I'm sure you can find through Google. And that's interesting. But I'm trying to focus more on, like, the human side of this. Again, the book is focused a lot on credit and collections, customers, and so forth. But and you also criticize people that are focused on, that have the sales mentality. What is the sales mentality?
Well, the sales mentality is something that I started out with, unfortunately. I took a business from zero to $120 million in 7 years, which was fabulous.
Wow.
And because I had the sales mentality, I took it from $120 million to zero in 7 months. It wasn't funny then, and it certainly isn't too funny now,
but it's truthful. Yeah.
And what happened was that every day I walked in, I used to ask one question, and that question was, how much in sales did we do yesterday? How much in sales did we do yesterday?
Right.
And most people who start businesses come out of the sales side. And if you only focus on sales, that's what I call a sales mentality, you miss out. You have to concentrate on gross margins, on profit. Those are the important things in business.
Right.
Or sales help.
Yes, but it's the cash at the end of the day, whatever you have left, that's what matters.
Well, you're absolutely right. Cash is the best commodity. It's the hardest commodity to get and the easiest commodity to spend. And until you get to critical mass, and I define that as living off your own cash flow, you really don't have a business.
That's true.
Since cash is limited, most people, Sam and Susie, make the same mistake. They waste it. Oh, they get pretty offices or get matching stationaries or hire somebody to
yes.
do their logo. They have to
What's
understand
wrong with stationery?
What's that, Susie?
What's wrong with matching stationery?
Well, it's really nice if you can afford to do it or if you have that talent to do it yourself, but most people go out and hire people to do that.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
And, sorry, I'm a woman.
I think we saw a lot of this excess during the dot-com bubble and stuff. A lot of people, I remember, getting all these nice offices, as you mentioned, and stuff, and then soon they run out of cash. So
exactly. If during the dot-com bubble, which is a great example, Sam, mm-hmm. people, the first thing they did when they raised these millions of dollars is they throw a big party and have a name band come in.
Yeah.
And they'd waste $1 million worth of cash.
Yeah, yeah. There you go, yeah.
Right, so cash is the hardest commodity. You have to hold on to it, and you have to spend it wisely.
Right, right.
After you make money and have the cash flow, you can do what you want with the money.
That's right, that's right. But first and foremost, and you probably want to keep investing in your business, if you do have profits, to keep putting it in the business if you want it to grow.
You certainly do. You not only invest it back in your business, but you invest it in your employees.
Right.
You make them happy so you don't have turnover, and they stay for long periods of time. So that's also an investment, and that's a smart way to use your cash.
Right, right. And you also touched on one thing that I think is really it relates to me, or I relate to it a lot, because I started this radio station and several months ago, and Susie knows I've been working myself to death.
Mm-hmm.
And yet I know I'm not going to grow until I learn to delegate some of the work. But it's so hard to let go of this little baby that you build.
You're going to hit a wall. It's okay. We're all just waiting.
It's exactly right. And the problem is you don't believe that anybody can do it better than you. And that's the problem.
Yes.
And the truth of the matter is they probably can't. But they're going to do well enough and good enough for you to move on. Otherwise, your business will never grow. If you micromanage every little part of your operation, it's not going to grow. Now, it's a good idea to know all parts of your operation, but you have to let go, and you have to have faith in the people. Will they make some mistakes? Sure. Can they do it as well as you? Probably not. But they're going to be good on their own, so you have to let go, and that is one of the most difficult things, Sam, as you're growing the business.
Yeah, I understand.
Norm, I love you.
But it's definitely a requirement for management, I think, is to know how to delegate. And I've never been very good at it for the same reason you mentioned, is that you don't think anybody's going to do it any better than you can. But you're right. I mean, so you settle for it. But I can imagine if I keep having to sit there and update the website 10 times a day, there's no way I have any time to do any strategy for this company, you know, or the bigger things, the bigger picture. You know.
And also, you're not going to have time for your personal life. Remember what we said in the beginning, is really it's your life plan.
Right.
You don't want to sit there every day, 7 days a week for the rest of your life. So you're going to have to let go. It's going to
thank
help you,
yeah. Thank
accomplish
you, thank
your
you.
Goals, and it's going to help the people like Susie grow within that organization.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, she loves you, definitely. I know.
He says it how it is. I really like a person that doesn't sugarcoat anything.
Definitely, definitely. You know, I think one more thing is how you you mentioned the viability of a business. Can you discuss that a little bit?
Yeah, the viability of a business only can run when there's enough cash around. So when you live off your own cash flow, that means you don't have to go to banks, or you don't have to hock your receivables, or you don't have to go to your mother-in-law for money. When you can live off your own cash flow, that shows that the business is viable. I'll just tell you a quick lesson. They say a smart man or woman learns from his or her mistakes.
Right.
And all my life I've been smart. But a wise person learns from the mistake of others. And
there,
Sam, I think you should become wise.
Yes.
Learn from other people's mistakes.
There you go. There you go. This is awesome. I mean, you obviously have been in business for a while. How long have you been writing for Inc. magazine?
14 years. I have a monthly column called Street Smarts.
Oh, amazing. 14 years. Wow.
Where are you from originally?
I'm from Brooklyn, New York originally.
I just left Brooklyn, New York yesterday. I knew it.
<That's> Where in Brooklyn, Susie?
I was on Menahan Street. I was there for an event called Bike Kill.
Oh, great.
Yes,
and
yes.
And not only I now live back in Brooklyn. I moved to Brooklyn 4 years ago.
That's funny. I was anticipating you being a New Yorker, maybe from the Brooklyn area, after seeing the Street Smart aspect of the book and also the pocket knife on the cover of it. I really was putting
it's
those pieces together.
Knife.
Well, I give you one thing my dad said to me. My dad was a custom peddler. He sold door-to-door before the advent of credit cards and department stores. He says, there's $1 million under your shoe. And I never understood what that is. But what it means is there's opportunities all around you. And for the people who are listening in, there's plenty of opportunities, especially in times like this. Tough financial times beget great opportunities.
Yeah.
So don't get down or depressed when this happens. If you start a business now, you have an advantage to people who are already in businesses because you don't have a high overhead. So if you're thinking about it, this is a great time to start a business.
Yeah, and that's amazing. I mean, Susie has a little snippet there in the book about his father teaching him some lessons.
I was just going to say, it sounds like your dad was your mentor and the motivation for writing this book.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's true.
Yeah.
He was my mentor, and he had these great expressions that I didn't understand till years later, like, don't worry twice. And I used to come home and I was worried about the exam, and he said, if you worry about the exam before it happens, he says, you're going to worry again when it happens. So why don't you just worry once when it happens?
That's true. That makes sense.
I need that advice. Thank you.
Yeah. or then when he taught you to, when he said, if you don't ask for something, you're not going to get it. And so then Norm went and asked him for a higher allowance. And the father said, well, you're not always – you can ask, but you're not always going to get what you ask for.
So, well, later on, I learned exactly what that meant, because a lot of times, you want to talk to your customer and you want to ask him for additional business, or you want to ask him for things, and you can't get it unless you ask. So
yes.
If you don't ask, you don't get it. It doesn't mean you're going to get it all the time.
Exactly.
Yes.
And we probably don't ask a lot because we're afraid of rejection, but
Exactly, yeah. Right. As a salesperson, that's the one thing that they have to be able to accept is rejection. They're not getting rejected personally in most cases.
Right.
Maybe the person isn't ready to buy their service or product, or it isn't the right time to do it. But a lot of times when you go in and you make a sale and you get rejected, what I usually do is say, listen, I'm not rehashing this. I understand you said no. I'd like to know why.
Mm-hmm.
So that way, the next time I want to sell a service or project to somebody else, I change my method of doing it.
Right, right. Wow. This is amazing. And what about the title, The Knack? How did you come up with that?
Well, if you write, you understand one thing. There's two things you don't come up with. Titles and pictures.
Yes.
That's
the publisher.
That's the professionals.
Okay.
Yes, and you know what? They did a great job with it. It's a mental habit that business people understand, and anybody can get it. You're not born with it. And what this book does is it teaches you how to acquire these mental habits so the chances of your success will be greater. It doesn't guarantee success.
Right.
But it guarantees that you'll have a much better chance of succeeding in business.
Definitely. And I think it's a great book, especially for beginners, and because it really tells the things. I mean, I've been in business for a while, so many of these things were obvious to me, but I sort of wish that somebody had told me these things when I first started.
You wouldn't have listened.
Oh, shut up.
Well, he's a smart man, you see. Like me.
Yeah.
I'm a smart man. We got to hit our heads against the wall 10 times before we understand it.
Yeah, there you go.
And the book is for the people who really want to be wise, that want to learn before they make the mistake.
Right, right. Absolutely. Well, Norm Brodsky wrote the book, The Knack. Everybody go get that. It's an excellent book. And I like the cover, too. I usually buy books based on the cover alone. But it's pretty cool. I think it's nicely packaged. And I'm definitely going to start reading your column, too. It sounds interesting.
Well,
and
thank you, Sam.
Yeah, I mean, if you've been doing it for 14 years, you must know something. So, how long did it take to write this book?
About 6 months.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yes, but I've been thinking of writing this for 11 years.
Oh, I see.
Ah.
Okay.
So even though I only started 6 months before the pub date, it was 11 years in the making.
Right. It's all about preparation.
But putting it together in 6 months, that's amazing.
It is. It is.
Well, when you have deadlines, that's what happens.
Yeah. And I liked it also because there's sort of like Q&A sections throughout the book, and that you probably took from your columns and stuff. So that is... That is a nice added bonus, I think. So congratulations to you, Norm. I'm sure you're going to do great. Did this just get published?
It got published October the 6th.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Wow. Well, thank you so much for talking to us.
Should we save you as a website?
Yeah, thank you. I've been forgetting
the
those.
TheKnack.info is the website.
TheKnack.info.
TheKnack.info, okay.
Info, I-N-F-O. Well, all thank right. you, Sam and Susie. It was a delight speaking with you.
Thank you very much, sir. Norm. And much success to you. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, so that was Norm Brodsky, wrote the book The Knack. And I know even though you're not in a business mindset right now, you know, it's still like one day you might want to think of something in that. And it's like, I think a lot of people don't do it, you know, like you think, oh, wow, you know, this sounds good. I'll make a business out of it. But you don't actually sit there and count, okay, how many of these units do I have to sell in order to just pay my rent, you know?
Yeah.
How many do I – you know, I mean, and that's what he said. If you just tell yourself, oh, yeah, I can sell 1,000 of these a month and earn $100,000, that doesn't mean shit. You know, it's like, how much did you spend on this? How much did you spend on that? Did you have any money left at the end of the month, you know? And that's what it comes down to,
I am
to,
so
Susie.
Bad with money, Sam.
And you're bad with money. So.
I am so bad
so
with money.
So don't get into business for now, Susie.
No, while I won't specifically go into business, it's funny. Like, everyone in my life that surrounds me is, like, in business.
Yeah.
Or, you know, into starting up their own business, or they already did start their own business. I mean, and you know, I it's think something you I'm will. Constantly surrounded by.
Yeah, and I think you will, too, because you're a very independent person. You can't take really directions from anybody, right? I mean, you had a hard time in the military, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
But, I mean, if I had been an officer, you know, and, you know, had just fewer people, not fewer people, I guess, I don't know, I think the difference between, like, enlisted and officers is that the officers obviously give each other much more respect because they are, you know, specialists in their own individual field.
Right.
When you go in enlisted like I did, bottom of the barrel, man.
Yeah, there you go.
So but, I just didn't do it the right way, so to speak. But yes, yeah. I do know what you mean.
You'll come up with something.
Yeah, maybe.
And I'm not talking about an escort service either.
Hey! Thank you very much, Charlie.
Or a porn production company. Well, no, you go where your passion lies, you know.
I like to talk. That's what I like to do.
That's true. Okay, that's right. You just stay here.
You found my calling for me,
there
Sam.
There you go. Okay, let's take a little break because I got to go pee-pee, and we'll be back right after this.
A new study shows that too much coffee can reduce a woman's breast size, but that won't happen at Starbucks. Introducing Starbucks' new breast blend.
Mmm, I love this new coffee. You know, my shirt feels kind of tight.
Starbucks Breast Blend is an espresso macchiato infused with silicone. It tastes as great as it inflates.
Honey, here, drink this.
Hmm, that's the 8th cup of coffee you've given me today.
Yeah, I know.
And it's working.
Starbucks Breast Blend. It's the best way to a grande chest.
The best way to shrink your bust is Folgers in your cup.
LATalkRadio.com isn't just an internet address. It's the home of irreverent, cool, and entertaining talk. We say what we want.
He tried to tell her, and she thought it right. Hand in hand, they marched on through the night. He knew the answers she'd hoped to find. It'll just take a little time, just a little bit of time. It wasn't easy, but how could they fail? Though love can blind you just like a veil, he knew the price was worth the strain. There was so very much to gain, so much love was there to gain. And they flew so high that they lifted off the ground. They locked themselves away in the magic they had found. Every day they tried shadows Well, they struggled on, went up and down, did right and wrong. Misunderstandings were put aside, and the gap became too wide. You cannot bridge a gap so wide. Though they flew so high, they lifted off the ground. They locked themselves away in the magic they had found. Every day they tried to make paradise their aim. Oh, in the end there's nobody to blame. There's never anyone to blame.
You represent horrible ideas. God hates you, and he wants to kill your children. You should all burn in hell. Bye.
In a world where shitty talk radio proliferates the internet, two people have teamed up to save the world. It's Sam and Susie in the morning, right here on LA Talk Radio.
What was that last clip?
Do you think we really can change the world?
I know Jesus. I know Jesus hates me. I'm just kidding.
That was
where did that come from?
It's a clip I've had for a while, and yeah, I never played it with you. I guess it's been sitting here for a long time.
No, I've never heard that.
But it's pretty cool. So let's go back to New York for a second. I mean, you didn't tell us about the rest of it. So you obviously got stooped a couple times. How many times?
Twice.
The whole trip.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Well, when you're staying in a house with like a million people.
Yeah.
And actually the second night I was there, Saturday night. It was Franz, me, and his ex-girlfriend in a bed together. Very funny. Laugh it up. Laugh it up, Sam.
It is funny.
No, I didn't find it funny.
You have it coming.
No, thank you. It was his dream.
Yeah, I'm sure.
You know, but then I woke up in the middle of the night and, like, you know, he was cuddling with her and I was like, hey, hey.
Oh, so, you know, wow.
Swift kick in the ass over there.
But you guys didn't do anything together, did you?
The three of us?
Yeah.
No.
She's, you were just lying in bed together.
Yes, because she was supposed to go back to New York Friday at like... Back to Los Angeles on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
But then everyone ended up convincing her to stay, you know, me included. And then all of a sudden, when she was leaving, we had already, like, auctioned off her bedroom to other people. So now all of a sudden, she looks at me and she's like, do you mind if I stay in bed with you and Franz? And how could I say no?
Yeah.
You know, I couldn't be like, no, sleep on the floor, bitch. But so, yeah, I was like, no, of course, you know, you could stay in the bed with us. Yeah. And she's like, really? It's okay if you want your alone time. I could find somewhere else. And I'm like,
yeah, how? Well, fuck you. Why did you ask in the first place?
I know.
What an ass she is.
And of course, like I'm too nice. I can't be like, yeah, actually, it would be really nice. You know, I haven't seen him in 6 weeks and I would like some alone time with him. So, you know, but no, I can never do that. So,
yeah,
the three of us. So you managed
a couple times, though, in that house, in that apartment?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
How do you do it with 20 people there?
Well, when I got in it on Friday morning, it was very, very, very early, and everyone was, like, super passed out.
Mm-hmm.
So that ended up working out early in the morning. And then also, and of course, you know, because it's a house that Franz, like, rented, the beds are super squeaky. I mean... Actually, in one of the rooms, the bed ended up, like, breaking through, and, like, the box spring and the bed were just, like, sitting on the floor with the bed frame, like, up around it.
Oh, my God.
It kind of looks like a safety bed.
I didn't think they make, mattresses with springs anymore, or beds with springs.
This thing was old.
Really?
It was really old. It was very, the whole house was actually kind of weird. Like, there were, like, plastic, like, / rubber sheets on the bed.
Really?
Then with, like, other sheets on top of it.
Uh-huh.
But it made the sheets kind of slippery, so as soon as you move around, the sheet comes loose. And
how
then
terrible.
All of a sudden you've got the plastic sheet on the bottom and you're just like, oh,
how disgusting.
You feel like you're having like institutional institutional sex. Is that awful?
So, and then you get to see the family? Surprised everybody?
Yes. Well, my stepdad ruined the surprise for my mom.
Oh, no.
So she knew I was coming, but I ended up surprising my grandparents, which was really nice.
Nice.
And they thought there was no way in hell that it was going to be me. They thought it was going to be my other sister, you know, because she's a lot closer than I am. And so when I showed up to the restaurant, and I, like, tapped my grandfather on the shoulder, and I was like, hi! And he almost fell out of his chair. He was so cute. And same with my grandmother. She's like, oh, Susie, oh, my goodness. Oh, they were just so excited.
So so it was like a family gathering or something?
It was a family gathering. I had my stepfather, like, arrange a dinner with, you know, my grandparents and my mom and my stepdad and my stepsister and me. And the Franz.
And the Franz.
Yes, so my family met the Franz.
Yes, and what did they think?
Well, at one point...
Did you see any looks of shock on their faces?
Well, let me just preface the conversation with this. I don't think he had brushed his teeth in, like, 5 days. Because he left his toothbrush in New Jersey when he decided to come to Manhattan. Yeah. And he didn't buy a new one.
And you kissed that, right?
Yeah.
Okay,
I
go
made
on.
Him chew some gum.
No, I just want, I made I him just chew want some to clarify.
Gum, okay? Okay. Trident works miracles these days. So, fuck you. Okay, but so then, the night before I had gotten there, Thursday night, like while I was in the air, our bike group had gotten together and they did like some, you know, they were on some public access TV show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, promoting our bicycling cause. So Franz had painted himself, head to toe, hair included, white.
What?
Yes, with like face paint and body paint. So his arm had like war paint, white war paint all over it, his left arm. And when I found him on Friday morning, you know, half of his face was completely white.
Wow.
Like divided right down the nose. It was just completely white, but kind of dried and flaked off. And it was kind of in his hair and it looked dried and flaked off white stuff in his hair as well.
How pleasant.
When I brought him to upstate New York, he was wearing the only pair of clothes or a set of clothes that he had and that he had been wearing for 5 days with no brushed teeth, with white arm paint flaking off his face, his hair, his arm, and yes, pants with a massive hole in the crotch.
Yeah.
So this is how I bring him home to meet my family.
You know, if I were your parents, I'd fucking go into mourning. I would say my daughter is dead. She might as well be.
Oh, and you remember? And you remember his haircut from when you saw him at the party we went to.
Yeah.
So now that's like grown out. So it's got like he's got this big curly like Jufro mohawk kind of going on with like the sides that are kind of bushy and a little bit crazed. So yes, so this is how I bring him home to meet my family.
Yeah.
And my mom, the only thing she said to me after they met at her house, I went upstairs with her and I was like, "Hi, mom," you know, just kind of like chatting it up with her, and she's like, "So is he like your boyfriend?" And I was like,
"Yeah, mom. In fact, I came 3,000 miles away just to fuck him."
I did not tell her that.
You might as well have.
Oh, no. No, I told my mother I came home to surprise her and to see her.
Yeah. So this was the first time you really saw her since you started the radio show, huh?
Oh, yes.
Did you guys have any talks about that at all?
Oh, you know what? You're going to give me even more shit. I don't really remember much of the conversation because my stepsister, Franz and I took the train from New York City to upstate, but we took it to White Plains, which is where my stepsister lives.
Mm.
And so we had her pick us up at the train station because it's way cheaper. It's like, you know, 3/4 less expensive to do that. And so I started drinking with her once we got to White Plains because we were going to see my family and you've got to be drunk to go see my family.
Oh, really?
Yes, yes. So by the time I'd even gotten home, I was already drunk. And then it just kind of went downhill from there. I mean, uphill from there.
Yeah.
You know, with dinner. And then my grandmother's always like, "Oh, you've got to have a cocktail, Susie." Mm-hmm. It's like, "Of course I do, Grammy."
Of course.
So, you know, then the cocktails continued. And then next thing you know, I'm in White Plains again with my stepsister. And, oh, this is actually pretty big. I don't know if I should say this or not.
Well, then don't, Susie. You're getting yourself in trouble sometimes.
Okay, okay. You're right. I'm not gonna.
Yeah, if
it
has to do with the family, you don't want to. You know?
Okay. Yeah. We had a big shocker in the family. I'm just gonna put
you
it did?
That. You okay.
Yes.
Yeah. That's
I'm gonna come back after Christmas and fill that in. I think it's a good surprise. I don't know,
yeah.
But yeah. So it was interesting time, and they basically tried to pry all kinds of information out of the Franz, and the Franz wanted to say nothing.
Yeah.
At dinner, he just wanted to sit there quietly, and so when he gets asked a question by my mother, you know, and he's so quiet and soft-spoken, I'm always like the one barging in and trying to answer the question for him. And so my mother, being a teacher, she's just like, "Okay, Susie, now Franz has a voice of his own. We're going to let Franz speak now. Franz, now why don't you tell us what you do?"
Really? She actually said that?
Yes.
Wow.
That's just kind of the way she is. It
yeah.
comes off as patronizing, but it's not.
Yeah.
It's just the way she is as a teacher to kind of, you know, I don't know. To kind of mediate a situation if someone's like super hyper like me and then super quiet and I'm always like the loud obnoxious one and he's always the really quiet obnoxious one.
Yeah.
You know, when he does say something, you've got to watch out because it's usually something that'll sting.
Really?
Yes. But yeah.
To you, maybe. I don't think it's going to do it to other people.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Yeah, he has no problem.
No problem.
Well, yeah, I mean, what do you mean it's going to sting? What does that mean?
He could be very sarcastic and just make pointed comments.
I see. Okay.
He's very intelligent, so like he doesn't say a lot all the time, but when he does, it's usually something pretty good.
Yeah.
I don't mean sting in like a bad, mean, hurtful way. I mean sometimes, but not usually.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was pretty much
so
that
was
night.
That. And then the bike ride, the bike race, whatever. Oh, the fight.
The bike event.
The jousting.
What are you laughing about?
Go ahead.
Why are you laughing at bike jousting?
Because I think it's funny.
It is funny.
It is.
The whole
okay.
point of this is to be funny.
So that's why I'm laughing. Okay, go ahead.
Like, let me just explain one of these bikes. Like, it's a freak bicycle fest where people just try and, like, outdo each other, making, like, a freakier bike than the next person. Like, there was this one big bike. And it didn't have wheels. Instead of wheels, well, I guess it had wheels, but like instead of having tires, it had boots. Like it was made out of boots.
Yeah,
and so riding this thing is like completely ridiculous.
It really is funny.
And then people just have these huge like 8-foot wheels that they have like a little kind of seat made. And then there was another bike that had a surfboard on the front of it. So I instantly, this guy, you know, people just are switching bikes left and right. You know, you drop a bike, you pick up a new one. You hop on this
really?
One. You hop on a unicycle. You hop on this tall bike. You put this mask on and you go ride into this. Or you pick up the bike jousting stick and you beat the shit out of someone else with it. So I hopped on the surfboard bike a couple of times. And so someone else is pedaling and I'm on the front surfing until you hit a pothole. At which point you all eat shit and die. Oh, this was the worst one, though. There's a picture of it in the sexiest photo gallery on our Midnight Riders website. It's of some guy about to hop on this bike, and I don't know how it happened, but his ankle got snapped in half at his foot. with this steamroller. And just the picture, I don't know how someone got this picture, because it was a steamroller bike that they had made out of like a big oil barrel.
Yeah.
And I mean, you pedal, two people have to pedal this like heavy thing that's full of like something, I don't know. But I think he got hit by that and has snapped his whole freaking foot in half at the ankle.
Jeez.
Can you imagine?
That's pretty
bad. And these punks don't have insurance.
Yeah. All right, let's see who's calling us. Good morning, you're on the air with Sam and Susie. Who's calling? You're on the air.
Hello, hello.
Hello, hi. Can I talk to Lynette Jones?
To Lynette Jones. Lynette Jones is not here. She was actually here Saturday.
Who's Lynette Jones?
Lynette Jones does a real estate show on Saturday morning. So why would you call now for Lynette, ma'am? Hello?
Yeah. Hi, can I talk to Lynette Jones?
Lynette is not here right now. Can I help you with something?
Okay, yes, you can call me. My number is 661.
No, that's okay. We don't want your number.
If you leave your name and message after the tone, Lynette will get back to you as soon as possible.
Yeah, pretend I'm her secretary.
Exactly. That was really random and funny.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
That's why I love live radio, man. It's amazing.
I know. It's like sometimes I think we should have someone to screen our phone calls, but then the rest of the time it's like, no.
Yeah, why screen them? I mean, it's not, you know, I'm looking for someone to prank us, but it's not happening, so why am I going to screen the call?
I know, right? Yeah. So you went to the porn thing last night.
Yeah, so there was a porn party scheduled right down the street here. And I went with TJ McCormick, and we met there. And he called me right before I got there, and he says, "Yeah, I'm not sure you want to come here. You know, it's all like hip hop stuff, you know, with young people and
young punks.
Young punks and whatever." And you know,
Wait, he got there first?
Yeah, he was there first. And he says, "Yeah, I don't see anything happening." So I thought, okay, I'd go. Maybe he was there a little early or something. So I got there, and sure enough, you know, there's like not much happening, a few hot chicks and stuff, but definitely not a porn get-together or anything. And so we waited and waited, and here and there there's a couple of hot chicks that you know are porn stars, the way they're dressed and all that. But there wasn't really anything happening, you know. We were really disappointed.
Oh, that's too
bad. Yeah, so finally, I mean, then there's like this huge stretch limo comes in. You know the Hummer ones?
Yeah.
It's huge. It's long, like a fucking train. And I'm going, okay, here we go. Now we're going to start having some red carpet, right? You have like 10 black guys coming out of there, and that was it.
Oh, no.
I'm like, where are the chicks?
All guys getting out of
it? Yeah, all guys getting out of it. I'm going, what the fuck? You know, where are the chicks? So then there was one fat chick there who was dressed all up in a costume or something, like an innocent young girl, you know, with a plaid dress, a skirt, and all that. So she looked like shit.
Oh,
and then there were a couple really hot ones, but you could see what bitches they were just by the way they were talking.
Isn't that the worst?
Yeah. You know, that's why when Satine Phoenix came in here on Friday, when I was here with TJ, it was the best time because she's really wild in, you know, in her movies and in her real life when it comes to sex. But she's just such a down-to-earth person, really nice.
And she looked like super down-to-earth and just really cute and just really friendly. Like, just from her picture, you could tell.
Yeah, not stuck up or anything, you know. So, but I think it's because, by her own admission, she's a little older, you know. It's not like she's 18, 19, you know. I think she's like 26, 27 or something.
Mm.
So, you know, she's a little more like thinking about it, I guess, more from a business perspective or something.
Who knows? Gotcha.
You know, but yeah, we heard some interesting stories. If somebody wants to listen to it, that was Friday's show.
And I definitely need to catch up on
you
that.
You were in New York,
and, yes.
So that was cool. So did you meet any interesting people in that bike gathering?
You know what? Not really. Mm. Because these bike people in New York, I mean, they were pretty cool, but you know, I like our group from Los Angeles a lot better.
Really?
Yeah.
It's different, huh?
It really is different. I found that, you know, here in Los Angeles, all the people that are part of our biking community are just really intelligent, like in their own way. I mean, some of them are like getting their PhDs in math. You know, we've got like lawyers in the group. We've got, you know, just all kinds of people that are in med school, mm-hmm. you know, just all different kinds of people, like a lot of artists and things that get together and just have like a common interest of biking. liking. Mm-hmm. I found that the group in Brooklyn was mostly just a bunch of punks.
Really?
That just wanted to get, you know, really just fucked up and just have their freak bike festival. And I just kind of felt like they had a disregard for like the private property and things that were around them. And then they had this huge warehouse that they all rented. Mm-hmm. And I mean, people were just like peeing off the roof and, you know, just being like really, really like just kind of gross.
Right.
And there was just a lot of like dirty drugs there.
Really?
I mean, it's one thing to get stoned and get drunk, but I mean, like we're at this party and everyone's just like literally out in the open just doing tons of cocaine.
Really?
And just like shoving things up each other's noses. And, you know, the music was kind of like mosh pit style, like...
Oh, God, I can't stand that.
I know. And Franz is in his element with that music. Oh, and this was probably the worst part of the evening for him. So by the time I woke up from my nap, when I went back to the apartment to recover Sam, so I go back and I find him in there, and he has lost his jacket, his vest, and his glasses. He can't see a damn thing without his glasses. So he is just completely screwed for the rest of the time he's in New York. He's got no glasses.
Oh, wow.
I mean, he can't see like 2 feet in front of him.
Yeah.
Like he can't even walk across the street.
That's terrible.
But, you know, he's in the mosh pit, like being like, rah, like being slammed into other people, like hitting the floor, rolling around like a steamroller. And then he loses his glasses, obviously.
Wow.
I mean, they're not going to stand your sweaty, slimy face.
Yeah. I would freak out among all these people and not being able to see.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
So he pretty much did freak out, and I kind of guided him back to a bench, and I just let him sit there for a while. I'm like, you need to like just stay here, sweetie, and you know, I'll find something. So I actually found another pair of glasses that were some random person's, like, you know, different prescription on the ground.
Uh-huh.
And it kind of fixed, like, half his problem. He could see halfway. But, yeah, I don't know. All in all, it was an interesting weekend. I probably, in hindsight, should have stayed here and worked on my UCLA application and yada, yada, yada.
Yeah, it wasn't as eventful as you thought it would be.
I mean, it was eventful and it was really busy and packed. But, I mean, it was just, like, extra partying and extra...
that you can do here anyway.
Extra traveling and things.
Yeah.
I could have done it all here. So, but oh well.
Oh well.
Live and learn.
Yeah. So you have the exam today, did you say?
No, it's on Wednesday.
Wednesday.
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, God. Thank goodness.
Wow,
it's not
you
today.
Guys have exams coming out of your asses. I mean, you just finished one. You have another one.
Well, I know. Well, luckily, the bio and the stats are alternating, the different exams. So they're not at the same time. Thank God. Or else I would freak out about that.
But it does keep you pretty busy all the time.
Yes, it does. Yeah. I will admit that.
What about, like, homework and stuff? Do they give that to you, too? Like, assignments?
Not really. See, I wish they would. Mm. If they would give us homework and then actually have it due, then it would kind of, like, force people to do the work a little bit, like, in a timely fashion. But they don't. I mean, they just tell you when the exams are, and they expect that you're an adult and you're going to get your shit done.
Oh, that's stupid, though. You know?
I mean, it's not stupid. You are in college, and you are technically an adult at this point in your life. And if you're choosing to be in school, you should be able to allocate your time.
Yeah.
But the thing is, most people procrastinate and don't get it done in a timely fashion and do a little bit at a time. They try and just wait till the end. But with these classes, you really can't just wait until the end.
Yeah, you can't cram for something like this. You know, mm-mm. I mean, there's only so much the brain can take at one time, you know?
Oh, I know. How's your daughter doing in school and with her health?
Well, she came down here for the week to recuperate.
Oh, really?
And do you think I've seen any of her? No.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, she's over-recuperated. She's out and about with her friends and shit. And she was coming down here to fucking recuperate. I mean, that airplane ticket was expensive to bring it down here, like, at the spur of the moment.
Mm.
You know? But, she was recuperating, but she wanted to stay near her mom, which I understand. So we got her the ticket and everything. She comes down here. She doesn't even have time for me.
You didn't see her once.
I couldn't once. That's it. A whole fucking week. Once.
Do you like stop by your ex's house and go in there, or is it awkward and weird?
I don't go in there. No. Well, no, because she just moved in with her boyfriend. Before that, it was fine. Yeah, when it was just her and the kids, I'd go in all the time. But now, you know, it's uncomfortable when there's a new guy involved and stuff. You know,
definitely
because it's not just her house anymore. You know. So, I mean, I took out the kids on, you know, even when I took them out, she brought a friend with her, you know, which I don't mind, but hey, let's spend some time alone, you know, let's have some good time. So, you know, here I thought that she's changed and everything, but you know what, when she's far away, she's changing, you know, mm-hmm. but when she comes back here, she's the same old self, so... Yeah, what am I going to do? Start getting irritated again from scratch? I've had enough of that.
Good, I'm glad.
Yeah.
I don't know, when I was sick with mono at my boarding school and I got sent home from my lesbian activities, and I was sent to recuperate at my mother's house, obviously I was sick and recuperating, but to another extent, I also wanted to go and party and see my friends and see my lesbian girlfriend who had given me the mono,
right.
You know, so I would, as soon as my mom would leave for work, I would take the car, and I ended up getting caught, and this sucked. I hate when I get caught, but I would hop in the car at like 5:30 in the morning when my mom would leave, and I would leave like half an hour after her, and I would shoot all the way up the highway and go to a different state, mind you,
right.
You know, I'm driving like from New York to Massachusetts, and, go see my girlfriend for the afternoon and then hop back in the car and make it home like right before my mom would make it home from work.
Yeah.
And then I'm back on the couch again to recuperate.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, she never knew any different. Except when she got her Easy Pass bill. Do you guys have Easy Pass out here? We don't have a lot of toll roads in California.
No. Okay, I know exactly what
it's
you mean.
It's to, like, to go through a toll.
Exactly.
Because I was too cheap, I didn't want to pay for it, and so I was using her Easy Pass that I had swiped. And so all of a sudden she's like, what were you doing in Massachusetts every single day? And I was like, fuck! Like, how did she catch me? Damn it.
Well, you were young.
I was young. Never make that mistake again. Now I suck it up and, like, I'll use the quarters. No, now I'm an adult and I don't have to hide these things, but still.
Yeah. So now that you went to New York, you sort of got it out of your system. Now, when do you think the next time is you going to get some sex?
Well, I do believe that the Franz is coming back November 14th.
For a visit?
No, forever.
Oh,
yeah.
I thought it was going for 6 months.
No, 2 months.
2 months?
2 months.
Oh, it's already been 2 months?
Yeah. Wow. Almost. It's approaching.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So you must be happy.
I know. Yeah. I don't know.
No?
Yeah, I don't know. I can't decide.
Mm.
I mean, it was really good to see him and everything, but at the same time, I was talking with a girlfriend of mine who was there as well. Her boyfriend had just ridden across country for the summer. He rode from Los Angeles to New York on his bicycle.
Really?
Yes.
Jeez.
We should have those guys in the studio.
Yeah. Wow. That takes some balls.
Balls and some really
serious
strong
balls.
Ass muscles.
Yeah.
And some really strong thigh muscles. I mean, you should see their legs. They're just like solid.
Really?
Actually, this one guy, B-Rad, he ended up, I didn't have a bike at this event, so he actually put me on the back of his bicycle on his rack, mm-hmm. and I held on to him, and he Sherpa'd me around New York City.
Really?
Uh-huh. Like, my entire body weight, this guy's just like, just pedaling along, like, all along the streets of New York. That's pretty freaking strong.
Yeah.
Swerving in and out of traffic, having the control of having that extra weight, just, like, all around the back of the bike. But anyway,
How long would something like that take?
I think it took them 3.5 months.
3.5 months.
Yeah.
Oh, but they obviously took breaks and stuff, right?
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
They didn't just, like, ride their bikes, like, straight through.
No, not straight, but let's say they ride them for 8 hours, you know.
Yes.
Something like that.
They would do things like that. But the stories from that trip are pretty amazing.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we'll
that would be scary to be on a bike, you know, in the middle of a desert or something, you know. And
having to carry all your own shelter, all of your own food.
Yeah. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Would you do it?
Absolutely.
Really?
If I had the right person with me.
Yeah.
You definitely need to have the right kind of partner in time to do something like that.
Yeah.
I would love to do that, actually.
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, it's definitely up your alley.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's just like the people that go camping, like, you know, in Alaska, and they'll just go off backpacking for a million years.
Yeah.
It's just something that you can always have with you for the rest of your life as
That's
an achievement, something
true.
You accomplished.
Yeah.
But so anyway, this one guy, Marcus, his girlfriend, Nicole, hadn't seen him ever since he left to ride his bike across country.
Uh-huh.
And so she was super excited to see him as well. And we both kind of got together and she was just like, you know, I hadn't seen him in 4 months. You would think he could have showered. And I was like, oh, honey, come here. Give me a hug. I know exactly how you feel. And so we were just, like, talking about those things. And it's like, you know, she's like, I just wanted to have sex with my boyfriend. And all of a sudden, he's got a dirty, yucky penis. And I don't want him sticking that in me because I don't have insurance. And what if I get a urinary tract infection or this and that? And then, like, all of a sudden, she was just spiraling out of control with everything
oh,
she was
wow.
so upset about. And I was like, good point. I'm like, having, like, dirty sex or sex, like, out in the middle of the wilderness somewhere. I mean, really, like, it's kind of yucky.
It is.
Like, seriously. I mean, it sounds, like, fun and exciting at the time. But then if you think about all the repercussions of these actions.
Yeah. Which reminds me.
Yes.
Okay. You want to hear a rant. I mean, I was hoping not to talk about this. But every time I think about it, my blood boils. And they left us a note at the apartment building that they were going to shut down the hot water for a few hours on
Thursday.
Yes. At the apartment building. for a few hours, right? So Friday, no hot water, right? Now, uh-oh, it's getting to be later at night, and you know nobody's going to come and do anything. So I just knew, because they had pulled shit like this before, it seems like always the problems happen on Friday, and then nobody gives a shit about
till
you
Monday.
Till Monday.
Oh, no.
No fucking hot water, Susie, for 3 days. For three fucking days. What do you do, you know? So I finally started, like, going and taking, like, cold showers, but not a full shower, you know, just sort of like splash water on me and stuff, you know, and soap and you know, and shampoo my hair and stuff. But you know what a shitty feeling it is, you know? You dine for a nice hot shower and
oh,
you can't,
Sam, that
you know,
sucks.
Shave with cold water. Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm so fucking pissed. I don't know what. And you know what? And on top of all this, this management company have the worst fucking attitude, you know? Because now that we're going to complain to them, they're still going to go, oh, well, blah, blah, blah. You know, like, they'll dodge any responsibility. And I'm really, really fucking tired of it. So I was thinking of forming a mutiny in the building, you know, everybody, put a sign up there, say, everybody deduct $100 from their rent next month, you know, as protest. I mean, I think
are there a lot of people in
that.
The building?
This is like 14 apartments or something.
Okay.
You know? So, and
I think that would be enough to make them notice. And I think if you guys went to like a people's court or like a small claims court, you guys would win.
You think so?
Yeah.
For what though?
You know, because they're neglecting you guys.
Yeah.
And they,
but that's not small claims stuff. You see, on small claims, you ask
well, like
for
people,
money usually.
People's court kind of thing. Well, if the land management people like were saying, no, like you can't, you know, take it into your own hands and deduct a certain amount of money.
Yeah, well, fuck them. What are they going to do, you know?
Evict you?
They can't.
Why?
Because, I mean, it's so hard to evict people. You know how many people just don't pay their rent for a year and they don't get evicted because... Yeah, I mean, you're very helpless when you're a landlord.
That it actually kind of sucks if you think about it, to
it
be
really
a landlord.
Does. Yeah, it really does. But at the same time, you know, when someone is pays all the time, I mean, we've lived there for 4 fucking years, you know? And the irritating thing, Susie, is on Saturday, people came and put a new fucking hot water
heater.
Yeah, on the roof. So what the fuck now? So somebody must have forgotten to turn on a switch or something? You know, and yeah, so I'm like really feeling because I mean, for 3 days, I've washed most of my body, but there's still some parts of, you know, like the upper body, like I think where you really feel the cold is in your shoulders, you know, and so yeah, so don't get near me, okay?
I remember back like when I was little, like we had a really, really old house, and you know, whenever we would run out of like hot water or something would happen, or the pipes would freeze. Mm-hmm. You know, we always had a membership at a gym, so we would all just go to the gym or something.
Uh-huh.
But since you don't work out, Sam.
Yeah, I don't work out, and of course we could have gone to friends and family, but I never
it's
had
just,
the time.
It just kind of sucks, like, especially going to someone else's house.
Yeah, you know. Like hauling all your fucking clothes with you and you have to change and all that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and how am I going to do it at 8 o'clock in the morning, you know? 7 o'clock in the morning.
How do you think it was showering with 20 people in a
house
with one bathroom this weekend?
Oh, God. The shit that you do, man. I could never do that.
At one point, it started raining on Saturday during this event, and I was taking a nap when everyone came back in, and they had to ride their bikes in the pouring, like, freezing rain.
Uh-huh.
And when you're soaking wet and it's raining, and then you've got the wind, and then you're on a bike creating more wind,
uh-huh,
by the time everyone got back to the house, there were 6 people in the one shower at the same time.
Really?
In various, like, you know, levels of clothing coming on and off.
Wow.
Guys and girls just
like
mashed into the one shower. Yes.
Yeah. Wow.
That house smelled so gross by the time Sunday morning. Like, as soon as you left and you'd walk back in, it was just, like, sweaty, wet bike people. I was like, I feel so badly for the cleaning people or for the landlord that's coming in here, like, after everyone leaves.
Yeah.
Because I'm telling you, there are just dirty bike socks hanging everywhere and just, like, just wet clothing and, like, sweaty, yucky bike people.
Yeah.
It was your biggest nightmare.
Yeah. I mean, did you stop and think, I came all the way out here for this?
Yeah. Did yeah. You? The thought crossed my mind. But you know what? Like, I'm a camper. I was in the army. Like, I can get down and dirty with the best of them.
Yeah, it doesn't frighten you.
It doesn't frighten me. But, you know, when it comes down to it, I don't choose to live that way on a daily basis.
Yeah.
Let's just put it that way. We'll leave it at that.
Yeah.
Poor Sam. Poor Sam's dirty.
Yeah, I know. Well, I'm looking forward to a hot shower today.
You still haven't had one?
No. I mean, what? Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, this morning I still had to take a cold fucking dip.
Oh, Sam, that sucks.
Yeah, it really does, Susie. You know, and I love showers. I shower 2-3 times a day, every day.
That's a waste of water.
It's not.
That's bad for the environment.
No, but I take short ones.
How short?
Like 5 minutes.
I don't believe you.
You don't?
No. I think you spend like an... You know what? That's where all your time goes. You spend like 4 hours a day in the shower.
How the fuck did you figure that out? You have no basis to claim that.
I don't know. I'm just making things up over here now.
It's not a waste of water. Come on.
It is a waste of water.
No, what about people that masturbate in the shower? They waste water.
That's a waste of water too.
Yeah.
Definitely.
That's a bit... Yeah. I mean, that creates a water shortage because people are masturbating.
So does taking three showers a day. That's such a waste. What is the need to take three showers in a day?
Well, usually it's two, Susie. So if it's really a hot day, I'll take three. But why? Because I sweat. And it's hot. And I found the shower, it's like, it makes you like a new person, you know? So sometimes, like, you know, in the evening or something, you know, I'm tired and all this. Take a shower. I'm like ready for a few more hours, you know? So it's cool.
Shower in the evening just puts me right to sleep.
Really?
Yeah, totally relaxes me.
You know what puts me to sleep is sitting in front of the TV. I never watch TV. The other night I thought, you know what, let me devote some time to my wife and stuff. We started watching The Zohan.
Let me devote some time to my wife.
To my wife.
Let's turn the TV on. Yeah. That is the worst thing I've ever heard.
No, we're sitting together. No, we were going to watch a movie, okay?
Okay.
Zohan, which is the stupidest fucking movie I've ever seen, man, you know? And the only attraction was because he's supposedly like a former Israeli agent. But, I mean, his accent is definitely not Israeli. It's some kind of, I don't know what fucking accent he put on. And it wasn't funny. It was just a stupid movie.
Oh,
so
no.
I don't know why people liked it so much. But I never liked Adam Sandler, and that's probably why I didn't like this movie. You know?
I'm not a big fan of his either.
No, I don't think he's funny.
Yeah.
I really don't.
I sat next to an Israeli on the plane yesterday.
Yeah.
He was a very nice man, but he was just funny because at the end of my like talking to him, you know, I gave him my card and I was like, "Oh yeah, it's LA Talk Radio. Check out the show." And he's like super excited about it. Because I was kind of eavesdropping. The whole conversation started. I was eavesdropping on the work he was doing on his computer.
Uh-huh.
And he was trying to type beautiful, and he kept typing B-U-T, and you know, and it was coming up like misspelled. Then he would try and like click, you know, correction, and it was like bountiful or this. And finally, I just saw him like erase it and write, "That's nice." And so I was like, "Aw." I was like, "You don't need to erase it and say that's nice." I was like, "It's B-E-A-U." And then he was just like, "Oh, thank you." But then I felt bad because I'm like sitting there spying on his work and like his emails that he's writing, his private like letters he's writing. And so that's kind of how we started talking. And then also I had to climb over him like 6 times, like on my way to the bathroom to puke. So then I felt bad that I kept making him get up. But he ended up like carrying my bag all the way, like from when we got off the plane, and walking me outside to where my girlfriend was picking me up. And then
that's
he's like,
"Nice."
I know, it was really nice.
I never do that. I'm too shy to offer someone to carry your bag.
Well, I'm glad he did. It was a really heavy bag.
Yeah, it was nice.
It was making me lopsided trying to carry it. Yeah. And I'd been telling him on the plane how I was freaking out about not having enough time in my life to do everything this week. And I'm like, "Oh my God, I don't know what to do, this and that." Mm-hmm. And then on top of it all, once he finishes carrying my bag to the curb, he wants to take me out for dinner and go on a date.
Well, of course. What did you think?
I don't know.
You think people do this for their health? No.
I had just spent like 6 hours telling him how I'm freaking out, how I don't have enough time to do anything. Because he kept trying. He's like, "You look tired." He's like, "You should sleep." And I'm like, "Okay." I try and close my eyes. And then like the list of things I have to do just keep building up in my head. And next thing you know, I'm awake. And I'm like, "I need to get off this plane. You know, I've got to go put my couch on top of my Mini Cooper."
Yeah. I'm just willing to bet you the moment you started talking to him about his beautiful, the spelling of beautiful.
Butterful.
At that moment, he was already fucking you. You have to understand. Okay? And I'm sure the whole flight, he's just thinking, "How am I going to get her to bed?" Okay?
And then, of course, I give him a business card with like my email and my phone number.
Yeah,
on
there
it.
You go. And you're going to hear from him. Trust me.
Well, he was super nice and he was cool, so I don't know, whatever.
Did you tell him your co-host was Israeli?
Yes.
Oh, cool.
I was like, "These damn Jews, they just keep popping up in my life, I swear." He didn't really, I don't think his English wasn't really that good, so I don't think he really kind of got that joke.
He didn't get it.
Here he is thinking like he's sitting next to some anti-Semitic bitch from New York. And I'm like, no, that's not the way it is at all.
Oh, well, another show is coming to a conclusion, Susie.
I think I might take a nap.
We've been here almost 2 hours. I know. You at least the show picked you up a little bit, but now you're like spent again.
Yeah.
You look spent. You're going to be able to drive okay?
Driving here was actually kind of dangerous. My eyes were so tired. Yeah. They were just like...
I know. That's how I used to drive to the old office every day. Fall asleep on the fucking freeway.
So dangerous.
Yeah. But at any rate, well, we're glad to have you back, Susie.
Thank you.
Are we going to have you all week, or are you leaving Friday? When are you leaving?
I'm supposed to leave Wednesday night for Vancouver.
Oh, wow.
That's why I told you I wanted to do remote shows Thursday and Friday.
Oh, okay.
If you ever listen to what I say, Sam.
Okay. Well, no remote shows. You can call into the show, but I'll have TJ here or something.
Okay.
Or Johnny or somebody.
Well, at this point...
Because, you know,
point,
I mean, we're going to have, like, guests and people scheduled to come in and everything, you know.
Well, if I don't get my thing, if I don't get everything I need to get done, I might not be able to go. Mm. So, I'm going to play it by ear.
Okay.
But Madonna's on Thursday. My girlfriend's bought me the ticket for Madonna
in
Vancouver.
Yeah, don't miss it. Don't miss it.
I know, but it's the rest of my life that I'm trying to plan for here. That's for the rest true. Of the week. That's so it's true. Like Madonna, the rest of my life. Madonna, the rest of my life.
And the conclusion?
I don't know yet.
Fuck Madonna.